This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Tomorrow at this time, join guest host Joe Palca on Science Friday for an update from the International AIDS meeting in Thailand, plus treating drug-resistant leukemia. Right now, Martha Stewart's slow and very public descent from national hostess to convicted criminal will pass another milestone tomorrow. Stewart will once again appear before a U.S. District Court in Manhattan, this time to be sentenced for her conviction last March on federal charges. While there are differing theories as to what might happen, most legal experts agree that Stewart will have to serve some time in prison. Joining us now is New York Times reporter Constance Hayes, who's been following the story. And if you would like to join our discussion, give us a call at 989-8255. That's 1-800-989-8255. Constance Hayes, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Perhaps you could just outline what the sentencing options are in the Martha Stewart trial.
Well, there are federal guidelines for sentencing someone who's been convicted of the kinds of crimes that she's been convicted of. And in general, it's about 10 to 16 months, given her background. She's not a career criminal. And given the nature of the crimes that she's been convicted of.
Now, community service could be part of her sentence. Is that right?
So far, that hasn't really been raised as a real possibility. I think she's asked for it. I think most people do ask for it as an alternative. But the judge in her case is most likely to follow the guidelines based on what she's done in the past. So
it couldn't be some kind of combination of, I mean, I had read something that said perhaps she could get community service and then it would be perhaps the time in prison would be reduced somewhat. That doesn't seem like a likelihood?
I think she could get a sentence and then have half of it or so served behind bars and the other half served under house arrest. And during the house arrest, she might be able to engage in some activity like that. But I don't think they accept it as a straight trade, no.
Now, would that be unusual, that kind of sentence you just described, where she would serve part of it in house arrest? I mean, would people think that she was being treated lightly because she is Martha Stewart if that kind of sentence came down?
No, I think other people have gotten that in the past, other ordinary people who are not considered, you know, dangerous to society or likely to repeat their crimes, so I think she would fall into that category.
Now, this is a woman with no prior convictions. She's convicted of a nonviolent crime. Up until now, she's been certainly a stalwart citizen. Is the judge likely to be lenient? Is there any way of predicting that ahead of time?
There really is no way to predict it. I think the judge at this point has probably made up her mind. But tomorrow there will be appeals from her lawyers. She may address the court herself and ask for, you know, leniency or suggest something that she'd rather do. And usually that doesn't really affect what the judge decides, largely because those guidelines are there and they tend to follow them.
What appeals are left?
Well, her lawyers can file what's called a notice of appeal immediately following the sentencing. And that gives them, they have actually 10 days to do that, but they may do it right away. And that just lets the court know that they plan to appeal the sentence. And at that point, the judge could say, I'm going to let you go free pending the outcome of your appeal. But the judge could also say, I order you to start serving the sentence immediately or on a date, you know, say August 5th or something, at so-and-so, you know, at such-and-such a prison, although that will also be determined later. The Bureau of Prisons makes recommendations based on where a prisoner is likely to be released and also based on other factors like overcrowding and the person's background.
Right. And any idea of what sentence, what prison she might be sent to? Or well, I know that she's asked, I think, or I don't know if they can ask, but wants the minimum security prison near her home in Connecticut is what I understand.
Well, there's Danbury. She has to go to a women's prison, obviously, mm-hmm. and there are only about 12 across the country. But as we saw with Lee Fasto, sometimes people are put in these correctional centers in big cities, too. I think that's unlikely for her because the MCC in New York houses really the most dangerous prisoners and people awaiting trial, and she doesn't really fall into either category.
Well, Lee Fasto, who was convicted in the Enron scandal, another woman found guilty of white-collar crime, ended up in a maximum security prison.
Right, in Houston, yeah. But I think that had to do with her request as well.
Now, despite what's going on, despite the situation she's in, Martha Stewart is maintaining a very high profile, as I understand it.
That's right. She's not hiding. She's not, you know, trying not to see anybody. She's basically living her life as she always has. And people, I think, are taking notice because of her change and status and sort of what she faces tomorrow. But there are those who think it's great that she's doing that, and one or two people have kind of said, well, maybe it's not the greatest idea in the world, but you know, in general, you have to kind of stand back and, you know, let her live her life.
Well, in hopes of improving her prospects, Martha Stewart hired what is known as a sentencing consultant to aid in her case. Mm-hmm. Sentencing consultants help defendants who can afford their services, mostly white-collar criminals, to get lighter penalties. And ideally, they persuade judges to let their clients serve less time and have their sentence spent in places more savory than federal prison. Alan Chassid is a federal post-conviction specialist who's done sentence consulting work. He joins us from his office in Alexandria, Virginia. I wonder, Mr. Chassid, if you could describe what it is that you do exactly.
Well, for most cases, I help attorneys through the labyrinth of the sentencing guidelines that whose existence today are somewhat under question, and then also help and assist with that designation to a Bureau of Prisons facility, because there are some rather elaborate and detailed systems for both determining what the sentence might be and for which level of security within the Bureau of Prison system an individual is going to. I tend to specialize in those particular areas and therefore can advise lawyers and their clients as to what to do as early on in the process to help influence or impact or infect the eventual decisions that are coming down the pipe.
How do you do that? I'm not quite sure how that works within the legal system, how you could somehow influence what how a client would be sentenced or where they would actually be sent to prison?
Well, there are a number of criteria that are used in the sentencing guidelines, and again, I will say that under a recent Supreme Court decision, we're not quite sure whether the guidelines are applicable. As a matter of fact, the judges in the Second Circuit have just asked, all of the judges on the Court of Appeals have just asked the Supreme Court to decide this issue. But as I said, there are a number of items, enhancements, offense and offender characteristics associated with a crime that are added up under the sentencing guidelines to determine a particular range within which the judge typically will sentence. And because the absence or presence of these factors can add or subtract time, depending upon what the charge is, depending upon what the statement of facts associated with a guilty plea happen to be, some of those additions and subtractions may or may not come into place. So part of the work that I'll do, let's say, in negotiating a plea, is to get a charge where certain aggravators are not going to be implicated by the fact pattern involved in the plea agreement.
I don't understand what that means at all, the fact pattern involved in the plea agreement. Maybe you could try and translate it into English for us.
Let's talk about Martha Stewart's trial.
Okay.
The judge has sat in and listened to all the evidence, all the witnesses, and has looked at the pieces of evidence submitted during the course of the trial. So the judge is familiar with the details of the trial. However, when in about 95% of the cases, folks just come in and plead guilty to a set of charges. And because there is not necessarily a description of what happened, as part of a plea agreement, you can incorporate a statement of facts, basically what this case is about, to instruct the judge as to what's going on. And it's from that statement of facts and a pre-sentence report that is prepared subsequently that the guidelines are calculated. So obviously, if certain matters or certain issues are not addressed in those documents, then they're not going to be assessed in determining what the sentencing guidelines are. I'm sorry if I was confusing.
Connie Hayes, I wonder, do you think that Martha Stewart's sentencing consultant will have an effect in her case?
Well, I think it can help a lawyer navigate the system, certainly, as he said. And I think that there are some quirks to the system, too, that are worth exploiting if you're in that position. But as far as her track record with consultants, I mean, she used one to pick the jury, and that, you know, didn't really help her case. And then she's used them in the past to figure out sort of the best plan of attack in her defense. And as we saw, you know, the verdict really turned against her.
All right. I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're going to take a call now from Martha in Ann Arbor. Hi, Martha.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, go ahead.
My question is, why is it even newsworthy of what her sentencing is? When there's so many other things going on in the world, it shouldn't make any difference to us one way or the other based on that she was Martha Stewart or not.
Can I respond to that?
Absolutely. Thanks for your call, Martha.
Part of the goals, part of the ends that you tend to achieve in issuing a sentencing and imposing a sanction is not only to punish the individual who's standing before the court, but is to send a message to those potential criminals out there that, you know, if you do this and you're caught and you're convicted, you can end up in jail. You can end up with a significant amount of time in jail. This general deterrent factor is important to a lot of judges and certainly a lot of lawmakers when they set maximum punishments or impose mandatory minimum punishments as associated with various crimes. So getting that word out and showing that even famous people are going to go to jail, it has an effect, and clearly that's a goal of the system.
All right, let's go to Leo in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Leo.
Yeah, my comment is, unfortunately, for Martha, being that she went to trial and lost, that she's not going to qualify for the acceptance of responsibility, which is going to be a three-level downward departure. So in essence, the judge is kind of cornered into he has to go to a guideline sentence of 10 to 16 months, or it's going to set precedents for all kind of other individuals to come back on appeal. And I wanted to know what you thought about that.
About the fact that he has to go according to sentencing guidelines? Are you asking for a comment on sentencing guidelines?
Yes, ma'am, because basically he can't go below them, because without an acceptance of responsibility or a 5K1, which is cooperation, he can't not go by the blue book, which is the federal sentencing guidelines.
All right, well, let me ask.
He has to sentence her to 10 to 16 months, and I think that she was given bad advice to even consider that an option, because it would set precedents nationwide.
Can All right. I answer that one?
Yes, Connie Hayes of the New York Times. Go ahead. Thanks for your call, Leo.
I do know, Leo, that she's able to qualify for at least some level of the acceptance of responsibility, because there was a point at which she had issued a statement on her website saying, you know, I've done nothing wrong, and they quickly yanked it because they didn't want that to be seen by the judge, because that would certainly be seen as not an acceptance of responsibility. I think there is some latitude for her there in terms of trying to persuade the judge that she does accept what she did and she, you know, is sorry and therefore would qualify for a little less time.
I think Ms. Hayes is clearly correct, but there is an aspect of the guidelines, and again, I'm saying I'm not quite sure the guidelines are going to be applicable. I think the judge could determine in this case that they're unconstitutional and therefore apply whatever sentence between probation and the maximum penalty. But there is a part of this the guideline system that's called departures. And one of the arguments, now I haven't read all the pleadings, but one of the arguments that I think may be applicable in this case involves a circumstance where an individual is such a key figure to a business or an industry that when he or she is removed from that industry, the impact on all of the hundreds of or maybe thousands of people who work within that particular business are so important that sending that person to jail inflicts far more harm than the crime itself. Now, some aspect of that kind of an argument that has, as I said, been accepted in the past, is applicable, I think, in this context because of how important Ms. Stewart is to her company. But the other thing that Constance Hayes mentioned earlier, there is an aspect of the guidelines because of where this guideline range falls that the judge could impose half of the bottom of that range. The 10 months is the bottom, so only 5 months, with the remainder of that in home confinement. And then in a response to a question that was asked earlier...
I think we're going to have to do it very briefly. We have seconds left.
Okay, but as a condition of that home confinement or as a condition of whatever supervision is imposed, there can be some community service.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, to both of you. Alan Chassett is a federal post-conviction specialist. He joined us by phone in Alexandria, Virginia. Constance Hayes is business reporter for the New York Times and has been covering the Martha Stewart trial for the Times. In Washington, I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News.